Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota's U.S. Senators John Thune and Mike Rounds support President Trump's choice to nominate a new justice to the Supreme Court. We could just be a couple of days away from finding out who that is. And has the red state of South Dakota softened its stance on marijuana laws? We'll visit about these issues and those campaign postcards that fill your mailbox, some of which come from political action committees. Our Dakota political junkies today, Tom Dempster, he's a former state senator from South Dakota. Welcome, South Dakota state senator, I should say. Welcome back, Tom. Thanks for being here.
You're good to be here. Thanks, Lori.
I'm already getting twisted in the details, which means it could be an important segment for John and Tom to clarify things. John Schaaf, fortunately, is a professor of political science at Northern State University in Aberdeen, and he's joining us today from the Tom and Danielle Amon Foundation studio. Welcome, Dr. Schaaf. Thank you for being here as well.
Great to be here with you, Lori and Tom.
All right, let's start with the passing of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. There's obviously great political implications for this, but a historic moment as we look back at this justice's influence, not only on the laws of the land and the court, but on popular culture a little bit as well. Tom, let's kick it off with you. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how unusual is it for a justice of the United States Supreme Court to be emblazoned on T-shirts, for example.
Well, it's a big issue, and it's a big issue for sure. And I think the genesis of the big issue is Roe versus Wade, where many people say something that of that importance should have never been dictated, quote-unquote, by the Supreme Court, but should have been done by popular vote in each of the 50 states. So, I mean, it's been a recurring issue for a long period of time and obviously isn't going to go away.
John Schaaf, also, you know, when you talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg's legacy as a lawyer, we're talking about women not being able to get credit cards or, you know, sign their own mortgages. It takes us back quite a few years. She had questions about Roe v. Wade as well, but she didn't have questions about gender. She had questions about the legal foundations of Roe v. Wade and how it should have been argued, but she didn't have questions about equality between men and women. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on the passing of Justice Bader Ginsburg, John.
No, when she was simply attorney, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you know, and she had some path-breaking cases that she argued, including in front of the Supreme Court, that the effect of which was to gain some of those rights you were just talking about, Lori, that were denied women, she gained them. But she was savvy, and that what she would do is she would choose male plaintiffs. She'd find some male plaintiff disadvantaged by one of these rules. And so it made it politically, I think, easier. You know, I think, as I say, it was savvy of her oftentimes to do that and challenge some of these laws that would treat men and women extremely differently. And then find a male who is disadvantaged with them, and to kind of to highlight the absurdity of some of these laws. And she didn't win every single one of those cases, but she won most of them. Then I'd say when she was nominated for the Supreme Court by Bill Clinton, she was actually somewhat controversial amongst feminists and on the left because she had some criticisms of Roe v. Wade, not necessarily on the outcome of Roe v. Wade, but she thought it should be – and I don't want to get too much in legal arcana, but she thought it should be grounded on something other than what Roe v. Wade actually is. And that gets in the weeds. And I think what has happened over time – as the court has become more and more politicized, for whatever reason, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, maybe because of precisely the history you're referring to, became this kind of icon where they're making movies about her. And you know, you can get Ruth Bader Ginsburg candles and Ruth Bader which is unusual. I happen to be wearing a pair of John Marshall Harlan socks, but nonetheless, but usually. That's a joke. People can't figure that out. Usually having Supreme Court justice swag is certainly it's the only justice I've known of who people have done this sort of thing with. And so she did become an icon, I think, amongst people who are on the left or Democrats who really appreciated her jurisprudence and the toughness that she showed over the entirety of her life.
Yeah, from a pop culture standpoint, as a woman, for women who grew up at a certain time, Sandra Day O'Connor and Ruth Bader Ginsburg were such a big deal when they happened, because they're, and I think we forget that now, but to note, when Sandra Day O'Connor gets, you know, appointed to the Supreme Court, that is something we had never seen before, and then followed by Ruth Bader Ginsburg. So there is a sense, I think, of history too being the first at something, one of the first at something. Those two justices will always have, you know, maybe an outsized influence for you know, young women wanting to go into law, you know, for example. But let's talk about what happens next, because you know, she's had health problems for a long time. Some criticized her for not retiring during the Obama administration, and she dies very quickly, or very shortly before an election. And I've explained this to so many people in the past few days. So John Schaff, gonna make you explain it. Why is it controversial at all that Republicans would want to, that President Trump would want to, you know, bring forth his nomination according to the Constitution, and that this person would be, you know, vetted by the Senate? Why is that a controversial thing for people who do not understand?
Well, the controversy is all political. It's not legal. I mean, constitutionally, the president has power to nominate and the Senate has power to confirm, and they can do that whenever they want. But it becomes a political problem precisely because we've got an election coming up, and it's the conventional wisdom now, and I'm not making a prediction, is that, no, Joe Biden is in the lead, and the Republican majority in the Senate is very tenuous. And so why should a president in this situation get a chance to make a generational pick when he might be voted out of office within six, seven weeks from now? And of course, it's also added that when, you know, in 2016, when Justice Scalia died suddenly, Republicans blocked Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee to the Supreme Court, on the notion that there is an election coming up and we should let the people decide and elect. Let's make this an election issue. Let the people decide. And then, of course, Donald Trump got nominated and Justice Scalia became Justice Gorsuch. That was the exchange there. And as we can see, if you go back over time, there's every single senator has been on both sides of this issue. And so hypocrisy is rampant.
Literally. Maybe not every single one, but it's going to be darn close.
Well, everybody who was in the Senate in 2016 took the exact opposite, or almost everybody took the exact opposite position they are taking right now. And so then it's a real question of, and here, in this case, we have a time issue because, you know, the election is relatively shortly away. Now, do they want to get it done before the election? Then after the election, of course, if Trump loses and the Republicans lose their majority in the Senate, you'd have the prospect of a lame duck president in the Senate still naming a Supreme Court justice, which can, legally is not a problem. But politically, of course, that's a bit unsavory.
Yeah. Tom Dempster, is this hypocrisy or politics or just the process?
Well, here's what it is, Lori. Lori, I'm a sailor, and there are certain rules of the road that are complicated. They write books about these things that require maybe decorum, who require you to respect one another. And I once asked a sailing friend of mine, and I said, Rod, I can never remember whether you have the right of way, whether you're on the starboard tack or on the port tack. And he smiled at me and he says, Tom, he says, the biggest boat has the right of way.
That's case, not really true, is it?
Well, of course it's not true, but it violates all. I mean, that violates all decorum. It violates all the rules of the road, and certainly respect for one another. And in this particular circumstance, Tom, do you have the biggest boat? Tom, do you have the biggest boat? Is translated to, do you have the votes? And it appears as if Republicans have the votes. I do agree with the sense that by intimation, this says that Trump is at risk, and if you're going to get this done, you'd better get it done now. Off the board with decorum, do you have the votes?
John Schaff, John Senator Thune, All of the, you know, Dusty Johnson tweeted, Mike Rounds tweeted, John Thune tweeted about the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And Senator Thune has been very active on Twitter and in the media talking about this issue. And he talks about the obligation that he feels that he has. Tell us a little bit about why this matters in a broader context, because it's not really just about Ruth Bader Ginsburg or just about some procedural thing. For this party and for the Democrats, for many Americans who are deeply invested in what happens next, there is the notion, at least, of much being at stake. Is much at stake here, John Schaff?
Oh, I think so. You know, what has happened over really at least two or maybe even three generations as the Supreme Court has become more important in how we decide some of the thorniest questions in front of the country. You know, you could put it this way. For Democrats, the Supreme Court is a way to an institution that they use to enact policy. For Republicans, it's an institution they use to stop policy. And as some of our most fraught issues have been brought before the court is in confirmation hearings have become extremely politicized, certainly since Robert Bork in 1987. And there's so much bad blood at this point in the confirmation process because there's been you only have to think back to the Kavanaugh hearings and the travesty that was the Kavanaugh hearings, which I think really is important for this particular case. One of the reasons Republicans are being so aggressive is that they are, and I think legitimately, were disgusted at what happened in the Kavanaugh hearings. And it's sort of, if this is the way we're going to operate, then I guess who has the biggest boat is going to win. And to use Tom's analogy, and we've got the biggest boat, and we're gonna use it. And especially the opportunity to change what was a solidly liberal vote to a solidly conservative vote. These are the sorts of things that have only happened rarely, and it's a chance to really ensconce a more conservative or originalist majority on the Supreme Court. And for Republicans, this is a chance to do so. And they've been one of the things John Thune has said is that we have run on this issue, and now it's time to deliver. And Democrats have done the exact same thing. And so that's why politically this is such a fraught circumstance, because something really essential to our governing order, probably more essential than it should be, what the Supreme Court thinks about various issues, is now sort of in the balance, and it could get ugly.
And the Kavanaugh hearings bring us back to the Me Too movement, bring us back to the Clarence Thomas hearings, which loop around to Joe Biden and Tom Dempster. It's all connected, and no wonder we all need to take a nice, deep, cleansing breath right now.
Indeed. Not for a while, though.
This is not. There's no way to make this transition not awkward, but let's talk about marijuana next. And politics here in South Dakota. And I guess the segue really is, are people in South Dakota changing their mind gradually about marijuana legislation and what it should be in the state? Are we seeing evidence of that as we look at these two ballot questions that are coming up? Tom Dempster, let's start with you. A little bit of background on how we normally come down on medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, and how polling is already showing us that maybe not everybody is feeling the same as they did back in 2010.
I think that's right, Lori. This is the third time that medical marijuana has been on the ballot. And the South Dakota Chamber has issued and done some pretty sophisticated polling that, and I think show the results that 70% of people support or of those polled support medical marijuana, 60% support Amendment A. That's quite a change from what it's been. From my perspective, the important thing for people to realize is to not conflate the two, not to think that one is just like the other. Amendment A is medical marijuana. And many people would be interested in its use for easing pain, for calming nausea.
Let's be clear. I think the amendment is recreational.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
Well, yeah, the amendment includes recreational and medical, and the initiated measure is just medical, correct?
Medical is item 26. Amendment A is marijuana for everybody, anywhere, all the time.
All right. John Schaff, what are we learning from just the polling about this so far?
I think what we're seeing is that, you know, it's interesting that, you know, a year and a half ago or so, industrial hemp was the issue, and the governor vetoed a bill, and that was a big controversy. Now we're looking at leapfrogging, you might say, all the way to recreational marijuana. I think it's just, you know, this is a trend as these things have come up over time. Even when we were talking about the hemp issue, the industrial hemp issue, is that we've seen this around the country, that attitudes towards marijuana are changing. You know, and people will differ as whether that's for better or for worse. My own opinion is that it's for the worse, but so you can take that for what it's worth, which is almost nothing. But nonetheless, opinion is changing. You know, as Tom says, we've had multiple chances to vote on this. South Dakota has always voted no, and maybe this fall we're going to see something very different. Though I suspect, for example, on Amendment A, you know, the Sioux Falls Chamber of Commerce is opposed. There are other institutions that are opposed to Amendment A, and maybe they can start doing something to change people's minds. But for now, it looks like they're going to have to change people's minds, or the outcome on these two ballot measures is going to be different than what it has been in the past.
I want to close. We just have a couple minutes left, but I know the postcards are starting to come in my mailbox, and apparently if you live West River, you get these all the time. But I have never gotten particularly nasty postcards at my house, and now in District 14, it looks like we're having a race because a PAC is sending out sort of anti-Aaron Healey, who is a Democrat in the State House, ads. And let's just talk about this idea of you know, targeting a certain candidate from a PAC, which is this particular PAC, is the chairman is Dan Lederman of the Republican Party. Can we tell anything from the fact that this particular, you know, target is Aaron Healey? Does this mean she matters more than she did last election, or is this just run of the mill? What do you think, Tom?
Well, I don't think it's run of the mill at all. I always hate these hate pieces. But when Governor Noem talked about adding statues in the state capitol, it kind of raised my eyebrows a little bit. And I said, uh-oh, it's going to be interesting to see who bites on this one. And Representative Healey, I think, bit on that one. And as a result, you see this hate piece that basically calls her a cur dog and every other name that you can call one. Here's why. She lives in District 14. She won by 200 votes over an incumbent last time. Checking this morning, there are some 7,400 Republicans in District 14, 5,400 Democrats, and 4,491 independents. It's a district that can be impacted by these. She ran against an incumbent last time, beat the incumbent. The incumbent, Tom Holmes, is running in the race again. This is designated particularly at that race because the race is vulnerable.
John Schaff, anything you want to add about District 14 or Aaron Healey or how that's unfolding?
Well, last time we were on with Jackie, I promised I'd give Tom the last word, so I don't want to violate that promise because I filibustered last time and aced Tom out. But I think Tom's exactly right. Is that in this particular case, you've got a winnable district, and that's when things get the nastiest when they're the closest, and I think that's what we're seeing. And these things are relatively cheap to make. And you can mass mail out to people. And it's sad commentary perhaps on our species, but we are motivated more by negativity and fear than we are by hope and inspiration. You're more likely to get people to donate money or to vote a particular way when they have a negative feeling than when they have the positive feeling. And that's why these things occur.
Tom Dempster, what's the last word today?
Well, I'm a hope and inspiration guy as well. And as this conversation started off with Justice Ginsburg, America is nothing but a dream. And the closer that we can get to that dream, whether it be Black Lives Matter or whether it be women's suffrage, it's all a process. It's all about working together. It's all about decorum. It's all about a democracy. Nothing is better. Nothing is richer.
Tom Dempster, thank you so much for being here with us today. John Schaff, thank you as well.
Thanks, guys.